listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, December 14th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everybody. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you, and welcome to those joining us live as well as those listening in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, I'm going to go quickly because we have a guest tonight and we have a great topic, but we're going to go ahead and get into our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. And those are: 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So, tonight we have special guest, Dr. Michael Tischner, and welcome.
Oh, hi there. I was on mute. Sorry about that.
I can't tell you. I think if I can make it through a show or a broadcast, rather, without doing that, I'll be happy and proud.
Oh, well, you know, you have to... I call it a senior moment, but that's fine. Glad to be here. How are you?
Oh, man, doing good, and so glad to have you.
You know, I'm excited too, Mike, because I got all kinds of questions for you. But we had you on a few months ago talking about, what do they call it, UAPs now? UFOs.
Well, yeah. And that's the modern version of it.
Every generation needs to be different.
Yeah, well, actually, that was started in England, UAP.
That's an unidentified aerial phenomenon, correct?
Yes.
And it
does have a, you know, kind of sense that it makes to it because, you know, I mean, I guess it's just semantics, but go on.
Well, actually, the reason it was is because when they would take a UFO to the Minister of Defense... And he would say, yeah, well, come see me like the second Tuesday of next week. And they were always, you know, kind of, it was one of those things that just didn't settle too well. So they actually came up with UAP. Mm. And when they went to him and said, well, we have a UAP or unidentified aerial phenomena that might, you know, be a security issue or something like that, they got in to see the Minister of Defense. So they started just saying UAP, UAP. And then at some point in time, it caught on. They started using it over here. And so it's now UAP versus UFO.
So it's like a UAP could be anything including, something from another country. As
sure.
opposed to a
yeah,
UFO,
if it's
which
unidentified,
is why they,
it's mm-hmm. an aerial phenomenon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we had you on a few months ago. We've talked about that extensively. Now, you've been on quite the adventure since we last spoke with you. That's why I'm excited. So, first things first, I think it was in October, you took a little road trip again to take the course with MUFON.
Oh, yeah, that was November.
November, okay.
Yeah, and what they do is every year they have what they call a boot camp. And it's basically for people who are interested in becoming a certified investigator for MUFON.
Wow. Awesome.
And it's always in Phoenix. And it's 2 days. It's pretty intense, basically. So I found out about it when I was at the Roswell 75th anniversary. And so I signed up for it and went there and, took the 2 day course. And it was very interesting. It turned out that it was kind of a bonus because on Sunday, which was the last day, we had the crew from Ancient Aliens show up.
Exciting.
And they basically are doing a segment on MUFON. So they recorded our lecture, and then when we went out into, the first half of the day was lecture. Second half, we went out into the desert around the Superstition Mountains and, did a bunch of exercises and went through, some identification. And we also had them accompany along with that, so they filmed us out in the desert and so forth like that. So it was very, very interesting to meet the crew. And they never did tell us what episode it would be, but it's going to be on whichever one comes up about MUFON.
They make you sign a
We had to sign a waiver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I asked them if I was going to get paid for this, and they said no, but,
See, it's not just us, not just us.
Yeah, but anyway, it was pretty interesting. But the 2 days, first day was lecture, and then in the afternoon went out into the desert and went through some procedures out there, and they had a talk by some Navajo rangers. And that was really good. One of the guys I met there, he is the Navajo Ranger that you've seen on Ancient Aliens as well as Skinwalker Ranch. Oh. And he had a whole bunch of good, good stories and experiences and things like that. And I told him, I'm waiting to see one of these. And he told me, he says, well, watch out what you wish for. But, yeah, it was very interesting. And then that evening we had an astronomer in the evening, and it was basically going through basics, constellations and different things like that, and pointed out what are, satellites and how to track them and how to track aircraft, make sure that what you're seeing is, you basically want to eliminate all possibilities. And so they went through that, and it was very interesting. I found out that it gets really cold at night in the desert.
It does.
Yes, it does.
And very dark.
But the stars are so clear.
Well, unfortunately, it was a little overcast, so we weren't able to see, everything. But it was still enough. We had night vision glasses, and we had, telescopes out there and all sorts of stuff. And
can you hear, when I've been down around that area, and especially I spent a fair number of visits in Sedona, can you hear the hum in that silence?
Mm-hmm. Not me.
Well, to me, when I've been there and it's so dark, so silent, and it starts the air gets chilly, and it's like there's a hum, like this low vibration hum. It's kind of
I'm just going to take that to mean that the machine was turned on when you were there, Dr. Vicky.
Could be. But, so what was the layout of the classes from Saturday to Sunday? Did you go over technology?
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating that you learn about the constellations and so on and how to recognize satellites.
Sessions on investigative techniques. We had a couple police officers that have been in the area for a long time. One of them, I asked them if they were there during 1999 and the Phoenix lights.
Yeah.
And he said he worked a late shift, and he slept through it. So, but yeah, they went through kind of investigative type scenarios and what you look for and kind of how to deal with people and so forth like that.
Hmm.
We had a psychologist talk about the psychology and how, different sightings and different things affect people. Hmm. And, especially if they get involved with actual encounters, which kind of elevate it to a different level. And, just different, talk about technology of planes and, how to track them and different pieces of software that you can access to do that.
Hmm.
There's some out there that if you've heard that guy that was tracking Elon Musk's jet.
Yeah,
guy that just got taken off of Twitter.
Yeah, well,
you got the boot.
It's not a big deal. I mean, no. If you know the tail number, you can put it into this particular software package, and it'll tell you where it's been every 12 minutes.
Wow.
So all that stuff is out there. It's just you got to know where to go to find it.
Right. And, kind of get into this field of discussion, one of the things I was really hoping to ask is really what kind of equipment do you use when you're doing, when you're investigating these kind of things? Is it just mostly, logic and things like that? Do you have any cameras that
have all
optics
sorts
that you use?
Yeah, they have all different meters, things like that, magnetic type meters that will pick up on changes of the magnetic fields, which
that's interesting
are related to I'll say UFOs because I'm an old guy. but there's always been a correlation between magnetic field interference and UFOs. So that's the primary mode of kind of determining what they are.
But
yeah, there's meters, and then they have there's a whole myriad of equipment that can be used, but primarily just one or two. Biggest thing is being able to look at photos,
mm-hmm,
or videos, and some of the things that you can use to kind of quickly tell if they're fake or not.
Do you find that it's growing more difficult in the modern age to differentiate fake hoax?
Yep.
Yeah. I was worried about that.
Yeah, some of the software packages out there that allow you to do stuff with video. And it's more or less video is the thing. A still picture. And it's evidence, but it's not as good as if you have a video. If you have neither, as far as MUFON's concerned, didn't happen.
Oh, really?
I mean, you can report that you saw something and say what it is, and so forth. But if you don't have some sort of either picture or video or something like that,
mm-hmm,
it's going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. Just to inject here, Audra is in the chat saying she uses Flight Radar 24 to track planes, helicopters, and and so on. So that's one of, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. That's primarily what most of them use when they go out there. They'll see an object. They can go to Flight 24 and look at it and say, was there any planes in this particular area at that time? Mm. And that eliminates that. The other thing is, one of the things that they went through is how to tell a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, satellites are very constant, the same, you know, speed.
Yeah.
They don't deviate and things like that. So if it's a true UAP, you know, it's going to have erratic motion and so forth. So, you know, you can do a lot of things with, like, a satellite, for example. If you're taking a video of it, if you're moving the video camera, it's going to appear this is very erratic.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they get into all that and trying to analyze, you know, is it an artifact? Is it, you know, lens flare, for example, during the day and different stuff like that.
And, you know, that's one of the things I remember from when I was young. I, you know, would look up and I'd see, a satellite, especially, you know, out camping or something like that. And I know I'd point it out to my father, and he would, I remember he was the first one that taught me that, you know, I would see a satellite and I would think it was a UFO. And he taught me that, no, that's a satellite, and just, you know, kind of like what you said. And, you know, it's just, it's very interesting, and I think, especially in the early days of satellites, I think that might have been a common mistake that some people would make about UFOs. But, you know, I think another interesting source that it's harder to do on the civilian level, obviously we can't, but just the video that is released, you know, from the Pentagon and these different organizations, and the accounts that come from these pilots are really just compelling to me, and, you know, lend a lot of credence.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably the best trained observers around, so, you know, it's kind of like they saw something.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't one of ours.
Yeah, but it's kind of it's very interesting topic.
And trying to remain grounded and making sure that we're, you know, I say we're, but I mean, you know, MUFON and investigators are looking at real, you know, possible evidence, not just wanting to believe for the sake of believing, but actually trying to search for truth. And I think,
they have a set methodology that you follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it includes some very detailed questions and so forth like that. It's they're looking at hard evidence. They don't want to just, oh, I saw something fly by and it scared me, and it had to be a UFO or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty well hard science based, and that's what they're trying to do, is trying to explain this stuff. And a lot of, well, most of them say probably 97% of UAPs that have been, you know, logged into their system. Mm-hmm. Turn out to be explainable.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to life, when it comes to the paranormal, when it comes to anything that's outside of the normal scope of understanding, I think obviously there's something there to start it. But then a lot of times human imagination takes over. So a lot of what you're talking about reminds me of actual paranormal investigating as opposed to, you know, ghost hunting. And it's where you don't want to just have a good time. It's not just entertainment, but you want to you find any possible way that it's well explained by something that we can know, something more mundane.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are the times where they can, and it's a smaller percentage of the reports, but they're out there, and it's deeply interesting, the possibilities and what it could mean. You know, there's just so much to it.
Did they recommend what kind of camera to use?
Not really. A lot of them are done with cell phones nowadays.
Yeah.
Hmm. I mean, the technology's gotten so good.
Yeah, the technology is really getting really good. So, I mean, it's basically, you know, whatever you happen to have.
I was thinking maybe like, you know, like in a camera with a telephoto lens, you know, some, maybe some things like that too for trying to get a clearer image.
Well, yeah, I mean, the thing about that is if you have, you know, an SLR type camera that you could put lens on, and, you know, you can get a better shot of it, it's fine. But then you got it, you know, depending how far away it is, you're going to get into camera shake and, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. But, I mean, most of it are done with cell phones.
I mean, and honestly, the nature of probability, a lot of these things are going to happen when you're not all set up and prepared. So you're going to use what you have on hand. Yeah.
So just to go through the chat here for a second, Mike. Zach has asked, when you were there, did you get to meet or speak with anyone who'd had encounters themselves?
That's
or
an interesting question.
Yeah, abductions.
I asked all the main people there that were putting it on, as well as some people that was attending, and my question was simply, have you ever seen a UFO? And the answers I got was from no. To I do believe I did, to, you know, like the Navajo Rangers, obviously they have.
Right.
And so forth. So, you know, it varies. Not all the people that are involved, you know, in MUFON or involved in trying to, you know, research UFOs and so forth, I've actually seen one.
You know? Interesting. I wonder what the motivation is of curiosity.
Yeah.
Well, in my case, I've never seen one. Huh. And to me, there's too many people that have.
Mm-hmm.
There's too much evidence that they that something's out there. Now, can I tell you what it is? No. Could they be, you know, some sort of super advanced you know, craft that the government has? Well, sure, they could. Is it, you know, an alien being? Well, I don't think it's a biological entity that's flying these.
Well, that's interesting.
Things simply because, well, I say that based on physics.
Well, our knowledge of physics.
The G-force would turn a person into a little grease spot on the wall.
Well, but I mean, if we're talking just technology, I mean, I'm gonna cite the known factual technology that exists in Star Trek and the, you know, dampening fields that can create a stable, you know, inertia.
Yep. Well, that, you know, that's the other possibility is it, you know, there, if it is alien, they could be millions of years ahead of us.
Yeah. And,
well,
you know, I think
Star Trek.
I'm trying to think. There's a, it's a, and Dr. Mike, maybe you can help me out here. There's a law or an idea out there that based on just pure mathematics, there should be, you know, millions of spacefaring civilizations out there. And, you know, why haven't we come into contact with them yet? And of course, there's a lot of people that say, well, we have. But the other side is, you know, civilizations reach a point where, like ourselves, we have nuclear weapons, we have the means to destroy ourselves, and they have to pass that hurdle. The other idea is that there might be some, you know, civilization out there that when a species becomes spacefaring or puts themselves on the map, they get, you know, quashed or something like that. And it was somebody's idea, you know, hypothesis, and I can't remember who it is.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Actually, the scientist who came up with that just died recently.
And it's an interesting concept, but I also think, how does that play into, you know, UFOs, UAPs, what have you? You mentioned the idea that they might not be biological creatures, which, hey, you know, we use drones all the time. Is this like a scientific drone of sorts? Anthropologists, if, you know, as you were.
But, well, one of the things that from, you know, looking at a alien civilization off somewhere, you know, several hundred or thousand light years away, it seems to me that with what you want would to be an AI based craft to explore. And you know, it gets out there and it does its thing, it knows all the stuff. I mean, that's one possibility, is it's all based on AI, obviously far more so than what we have now.
Right.
But I mean, it's, that's one possibility.
Yeah. And it's, if I'm pronouncing this correctly, the Fermi paradox, F-E-R-M-I, after Enrico Fermi, an Italian-American physicist. But just to throw it out there. But yeah, it's, it is interesting in the possibilities. You know, of course, one of my favorite, you know, hey, we can't really prove it because we see things. We know that they're out there. There's something going on, but we don't quite know what it is. Mm-hmm. I like to say human time travelers, like time travel tourists.
Oh, yeah, that's another. I don't know if you want to call it conspiracy theory or whatever, but yeah, that's another possibility.
And, you know, it's also, it makes you think about space travel in itself. You know, do they have, an interesting thing is, do they have a means of traveling faster than light? Are there ways to bend space-time and, you know, fold space in? Or is it maybe a species that is very long-lived compared to us, and the time is just not that important in their perspective?
Well, I mean, a good example of something like that is the in quantum theory, you know, you got entanglement.
Mm-hmm.
In entanglement, you can take two electrons, you can put one at the end of the universe and the other one at the opposite end. And as soon as it changes polarity, the other one will instantly change polarity. Now, that just proves that it's faster than speed of light.
Very true. And a potential future form of interstellar communication. You know, and I admit that I've never actually seen this movie, and I'm ashamed of it. I have it on my queue, Interstellar. I know enough of pop culture to
care for that.
but
yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I know that in the movie, there's, I don't quite know what it is, but I know that their space travel involves some kind of time differential between them and, I think, Earth, just from what I've kind of gleaned through, you know, pop culture and things. But you know, that makes just all of these kind of things tie into making me think, really, what is the future of humanity going to look like? You know, right now we're seeing these unidentified aerial phenomena. Are we going to be more on a, you know, one-on-one basis with whatever's, if these are extraterrestrial, are we going to be in the stars with them 1,000 years from now? You know, I think about, what is the future of humanity? What does it mean that we see these things perhaps more frequently now? To mind earlier when you were talking about the Navajo Rangers, all of the different legends and stories and things passed down amongst indigenous
everybody
peoples.
Came from star people.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I mean, I think that, A, they are here.
Mm-hmm.
If they want us to know, they'll let us know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they've been here for thousands of years.
I mean, in the scope of time, you know, the modern era is less than a blink. It's less than a sliver. It's a nanosecond. But so what are the odds that they would have just shown up right now when we have the capacity to understand it on a higher level of, you know, that these aren't gods. These aren't anything other than just other life forms that come from a different place and might exist in a different way.
Well, I mean, if you have somebody coming down, let's say you're, you know, 5,000 years ago, and you see some object come down out of the sky, and it has flames behind it. It lands, and the person gets out of it. How are you going to describe that?
Yep, exactly.
You're going to say, you must be a god, because that's the only term that I know.
Right. And, you know, I think we've culturally, as a people, as a, you know, the whole... just as a society, as a civilization, a global civilization, we've kind of evolved to the point where we can conceptually understand these things in terms other than that, really finally. And I think we're finally ready to grapple with these concepts in a meaningful way. I've always had a theory that fiction, that the entertainment, the arts, they play a very important role in human development and civilizations. That's there's an evolutionary purpose there. And I think a lot of fiction prepares us to adapt to different situations. I think science fiction allows us to conceive of things that we'll probably have to deal with in some form or another down the road.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people don't really understand what kind of technology Star Trek produced.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
A little funny sideline, jumping into James Bond. He had one in which I can't remember. I might have been Thunderball, but he was in a swimming pool and he got trapped with sharks. And he pulled out this little thing, looked like a couple CO2 cartridges, and he was, you know, breathing in it, and he got out. Well, that was totally made up. But you, from what I read, there were just dozens of people calling, wanting to know where they can get one.
Interesting.
Well, it then prompted the development of, you know, very miniature breathing apparatuses. So, I mean, science fiction is a very strong thing.
Sorry, I was just checking the chat there. Hopefully we're still live. I know the Illuminati was messing with us earlier, but I think we're good. But yeah, it is kind of the chicken and the egg, right? A lot of things come, you know, a lot of things kind of correlate to sci-fi because sci-fi was the inspiration for them. I really hope that's not the case with Terminator, but, you know, we'll see.
Well, that was a true show, wasn't it?
I think we're there. Isn't there a Skynet working right now? But
I was going to jump in. I would like to know, at the end of your 2 days, I mean to digress. I just want to go back to so at the end of those 2 days, are you certified now?
No. What you have to do is there's a manual, and you need to read through the manual. And there's a big test you have to pass.
Oh.
So it's not just take this and you're in. It's a pretty good process. And, you know, it's interesting because in the book, there a lot of the stuff that was covered in courses that we take are reflected in this manual. I mean, so it's kind of like some of the stuff was actually kind of familiar.
Oh,
already.
You mean Dr. Kelly's IMHS courses?
Yeah,
awesome.
Very interesting.
You know, it was kind of interesting, but I'm only about halfway through it. And once you do that, I mean, once you take that or you buy their manual, you have to sign up with what they call the MUFON University, and they have a whole bunch of classes and, you know, exams and things like that. So it's a pretty entailed process.
I had no idea.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Interesting.
The other thing that, you know, it's like any organization, it's almost a little too political for me. I mean, you get to a certain level and it's kind of like
it's about
politics.
It's about status and, putting an image forward.
Yeah. So, I mean, but you kind of got to look through that. And when they get in reports, they assign someone who is a certified investigator, and it's up to you to follow through, ask questions, and go through and actually wind up making a determination as to what they saw.
Interesting.
And all that goes into their database, which you can access and so forth like that. It's all done extremely confidential. You don't know who did what. Basically it's to protect the person reporting it. Just like in paranormal investigations, when you go out and investigate something, it's done in confidence.
Yeah.
And so forth like that. So, you know, it's well thought out. And there's a lot more to it than what you would think.
So about how long would it take someone to go through that complete process?
Oh, well, I mean, if you have good comprehension and you read through the 200-page manual, and you take the test right away, and if you take the test and pass it, you're certified.
Interesting.
And if not, you have a certain amount of time that you have to wait before you can take it again.
Interesting. You know, go ahead.
It's actually good to know that there aren't people in an organization like MUFON who aren't like a little nutty, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I'm sure there are. Yeah.
But they have to go through a process, and you have to be
Oh, yeah,
pretty
you have to go
ambitious
through
to
the
go through
process.
that process.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to have a minimum amount of critical thinking that you can employ.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I was thinking about for this topic tonight as well is I'm curious what your thoughts are on SETI are. And that program and the likelihood of being able to find intelligent life that way, or being able to communicate perhaps with extraterrestrial life that way,
Well, they're using radio telescopes.
which is kind of an antiquated technology.
Yeah. And I mean, who's to say that, an alien world or species uses radio waves to communicate?
Right. That's kind of.
Now, SETI, at one time, they have what's called a wow
And
occasion, or it occurred, and for a
oh
brief
yeah.
few seconds, they actually received intelligent transmission, and they have on the sheet that it was recording all this. Wow. But other than that, I don't know. I think that radio telescopes can do a lot, but I just, as far as a communication device, I'm not real sure if that
Well,
would be adequate.
and that's kind of what my thoughts had been on it. I think it's interesting, but just like we were talking earlier with interstellar communication, I kind of made that quip about quantum entanglement. You would think that the communications for species that could employ that kind of interstellar travel or interstellar civilization would have moved beyond radio.
Well, especially if they're interdimensional.
Yeah, especially,
I mean,
absolutely.
do radio waves transmit through interdimensional?
Well, and I think that, let's talk
I
about
don't know.
consciousness, transmitting through perhaps interdimensional realities, and perhaps that's what, I mean, why out of all of the billions of floating rocks, how they were able to find this one, and I think maybe it's the, maybe not just human consciousness, but the life consciousness awareness kind of sparking a light in the wavelength, if you will. But, I know we're kind of getting a little bit off topic from UFOs in the traditional sense, but still, the idea
Anyway,
of.
it was very interesting, and I would say if anybody's interested in that stuff, just let me know or something. Look up MUFON and check it out.
Very good. Very interesting.
I think it's an awesome program that you've taken. Of course, you get to meet so many interesting types of people. Non-ordinary, which adds to the color of life.
It does.
So it was my thing
One of
too.
my favorite things about this broadcast is, ordinary gets boring. Ordinary is not interesting, and it's not expanding thought and awareness. But just coming together with this fine group of people, brings that feeling to me as well. Another question I had on my mind, Dr. Mike, is there anything in the MUFON boot camp, the training, or anything that changed your perspective on anything? Anything that was, illuminating or that kind of reframed things?
Not really. I think more than anything, it was just the amount of different technology that's available for, looking into this sort of, happening and so forth like that. But no, not really.
Okay. I mean, I
I
think
mean,
that
I've, it's been something I've been,
you've been
interested in a long time.
right. So, I mean, you're kind of an old hat in this field, and it's just an interesting, it's an interesting field. It's an interesting idea, and I apologize for my lack of eloquence this evening. But then again, am I ever? But, you know, and I love
well,
the
if you'd
discussion
have met aliens, you'd know what questions.
That's right.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you. I'm missing out. Or they're really good at wiping my memory, either way. But so I've also loved the chat that we're getting tonight. But go ahead, Dr. Ricky.
No, I was going to say, too, that I've talked to some people. I know them quite well, where having different experiences trying to gather evidence. Like an old friend of mine would say he couldn't see it with the naked eye, but the pictures on his camera, and this is in the old days, would show spacecrafts. And he had quite a collection of them. He traveled the world. But he got to the point where he could almost sense it. Now, I have another friend of mine living in southern BC where she lived, and I've been to her place and sat on her deck overlooking the river and the mountains, and I didn't see anything, you know, particular. But I was on the phone with her. She'd been there almost a year. On the phone with her, she's out on her deck, and she said, oh, my God. She said, there's a UFO. I said, cool, what's it doing? And it would do a zip thing, you know, back mm-hmm. and forth, up and down, around, glow bigger, you know, go smaller. And then there were two of them. And so for a period of time, they were showing up every night, and then nothing. But she could not, for the life of her, get it to show up on her camera.
Well, they're crappy. No matter
whatever she did. And she said, look, I'm not a photo genius by any stretch, but it's an iPhone and a fairly new one. Mm-hmm. And she could not get it to take, even in the night pictures, it wouldn't show up in her photos.
Well, I know a lot of the short videos that you saw released by the Pentagon, those were taken with infrared.
Ah.
Because if it was just visually, you couldn't see them, but it showed up in infrared.
Interesting.
Very interesting. And, you know, that kind of brings back how modern technology is allowing us to catch more and more. So if they have been coming here for thousands of years, perhaps much of that was simply out of our ability to detect. Mm-hmm. Although a lot of it was detected by ancient people, we can surmise through different things that have kind of come down in tradition, legend, and story. But, you know, one thing I want to touch on, too, and get your thoughts on, Dr. Mike, there's been a lot of discussion in chat about aliens and why they may not have revealed themselves. Dr. Gaddis, you know, made the suggestion that they've been watching us for a long time, noting the self-destructive tendencies of humanity, perhaps optimistic hope that they may step in if things get a little too far. And I'm curious, is there a reason you think they haven't engaged more directly, or do you think they are, perhaps, with a state or a government?
There's documents that they have interfered, especially with nuclear power. Isn't that right, Dr. Mm-hmm. Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They've actually, there was, I think it was 1967 or 8, where they shut down that whole facility that was I can't remember the name of the place. But, you know, it had a lot of nuclear missiles in these silos, and an object showed up, and it disabled, like, all 21 of them.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Which is fundamentally impossible, because they're not daisy chained; they're independent, and it just it shut them all down.
There's some speculations that you see online also about them craft showing up throughout Ukraine and parts of Russia, even mm-hmm. in the last few months, particularly around the nuclear plants.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just about to wonder myself why Ukraine and not some of the other conflicts that have been going on in Africa or Asia, what have you. But that's a key ingredient, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it seems to be. You know, there's a higher probability of seeing them around a nuclear facility.
And do you think it's kind of a safety precaution? I mean, do you think there's any possibility that we are trying, you know, a group of extraterrestrial intelligence might be trying to almost protect us from ourselves?
God, I hope so.
Yeah, it would be nice. It is.
You know, I mean, it's, you know, the way it's going, it's, it, you know, it's, I don't, you know, we yeah. need some outside help for sure. But,
some intergalactic coaching.
Yeah. It's, but it's very interesting. I mean, UFOs have shown up throughout history, you know, at big battles mm-hmm. and things like that. I mean, if you look at a lot of paintings from, you know, hundreds of years ago, you'll find that they have, you know, painted little objects in it that appear to be UFOs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
And so, I mean, it's something that's been recorded throughout history. So, you know, that's one reason why I go, now they've been here for a very long time.
Right.
You know, where do they live? I don't know. A good likely place for me would be in the ocean.
Yeah. Or, you know, another thought that comes to mind, is it the same, you know, group, same civilization, the same entities, you know, throughout time? Are there any competing entities, you know?
I think there are, yeah.
And, you know, the other question that comes in, I mean, is it too, you know, kind of human-centric to impose our social structures on what a civilization even means? Is it that we're so used to our, you know, human socializing and being a, you know, a tribal, for lack of a better word, a tribal people who, you know, are kind of bound in these ideas? You know, I think that we also have to be careful looking at civilizations that may originate in entirely different environments, different, you know, physical environments, and just different ways of life can exist. You know, I try to think, you know, when we think about a civilization, it's much like us. But
well, I think that's where a lot of people go wrong, because they have a tendency to think of them like they're like us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I suppose they could be. But having not seen one or anything like that, it'd be hard to to say.
We know there's something. We know that there's a source to these sightings, to these events. A lot of that beyond that is just speculation and trying to think about what might be. And, you know, I think much like, again, you know, a Star Trek was found, you know, formative for me, so cut me some slack for bringing it up repeatedly. But, you know, I think about the change that knowing that humanity wasn't alone brought to human civilization in that world of Star Trek. And I think that, you know, a lot of people, we were joking about intergalactic coaching a little bit earlier, but that would be a catalyst. That would mm-hmm. be a catalyst to for a larger group of people that need a catalyst like that. I think it would kind of change the dynamic, change perceptions in a hugely fundamental way. And
yeah, I think there's a lot of things in Hollywood that prepare us for what's to come.
Another theory about it being very purposefully to prepare us. And
possible. You
know, yeah.
Well, I've really enjoyed tonight. I have, and listening to you, Dr. Mike, and your experiences and your expertise and your insights. And it's, I don't know, kind of, it just gets me excited that there's more people looking into it. You know, prior to the program, we were all talking about back in the 1960s, and it was only word of mouth and very few photographs, you know, back in the day. Nobody carried a, mm-hmm. you know, a camera around with them. Usually took them out for family photos, right. special occasions. But the experiences that I had back as a kid and other people I've talked to, and some of the way old timers who had stories way before my time, to me, that is a lot more credible in a way than a lot of the stuff that I see online. Although seeing more and more things online, it does lend me to believe that we got some action happening, that we're at a critical point.
Well, yeah, but you have to be careful what you see online as far as mm-hmm. authentication.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, take everything with a grain of salt. Anything, you know, anything is possible, but just because something is possible doesn't mean it is. So I think that's a good way to look at a lot of things.
At mm-hmm. least some people are starting to look up more.
Yeah, very true.
Yes, very good point.
I love that. Well, just as a footnote, Tabitha says that she heard the opposite of what I said. She said that Hollywood was encouraged to cause fear in people. Well, sure. I mean, fear-mongering is a big business in a way, but you got to see the other side about how it opens minds. Right. I mean, when I was a kid, tapping into the outer limits was freaky, man.
Yeah,
that's pretty good stuff.
Well, let's just look to...
But I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of my favorite shows is The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, classic.
The original one, not the remake.
Yeah.
But
black and white.
Yeah, and, you know, things like War of the Worlds,
mm-hmm.
you know, the original one with Gene Barry.
Yeah,
I know I'm dating myself, but that's okay.
These are classics. I mean, these are films that will stand the test of time, but because of how important the cultural message is. But I also think, you know... okay, hold on a second.
see, Your computer's talking to you.
They're always listening. Always listening.
Yes, they are. No, thanks again, Dr. Mike. We're zeroing in on our time, but I appreciate you, Michael, and I. And we love having you on the program. And, you know, keep us posted on your adventures and what you're up to, because we love to hear from you.
Absolutely. It's good stuff. And just the fascinating topics of discussion. And we have so much more we could get into.
So which courses in particular at IMHS would you recommend for the students who are listening now and in the archives? Would it be M2? And is there anything else that you would recommend?
I think the ones that are, at the master level and above.
Yep.
And
paranormal investigation.
Yeah, because there's a section on ufology, and it kind of goes into a lot of things. But even on the paranormal section of it, you know, there's a lot of do's and don'ts and things you look at. And based on that, when I've watched a couple of these paranormal shows they have on TV, and I had to laugh. I mean, they were just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, they didn't take our courses.
Yeah, well.
They just want to believe to believe.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, sorry. But yeah, I think the courses at the master and above level were very beneficial.
Good.
Very good. Good. Very good.
Good. Good for people to hear, too, that so much reinforcement that you experienced from having studied at IMHS, and kudos to Dr. Douglas Kelly for that.
Oh, yeah, no,
very much so.
Yeah.
And it's just they're practical skills. It's critical thinking. It's looking at things. It's having an open mind, but be grounded and have evidence to back up your claims, you know, and some great points. But, yeah, we're zeroing in on the end of our time tonight, and it's just been fantastic. You know, thank you again so much for your time.
Sorry about no cards tonight.
Well, we're going to do it. I was just about to do a little announcement, too. And,
okay.
So thank you for bearing with us tonight. This is the second week in a row where we haven't pulled cards, and I'm sorry for that. We had a fantastic Dr. Zach on last week. Great discussion tonight. And I'm sorry to say that we're going to miss you next week. We're going to take a little break on the 21st. But we'll be back on the 28th, and we're looking forward to a year-end broadcast, special. And we're going to be doing a lot of cards on that night. So I hope
we'll start the night off that way, and we'll have conversations to, you know, what we've been through, what to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll start drawing cards right off the top of the program and have a great time for the end of the year. So meanwhile, I would like to say to everybody, happy winter solstice, Yuletide, which is next Wednesday. I will be with my family, my grandkids, and, I love this time of year.
It's truly wonderful.
Just watch out for the weather.
Yeah.
We're not too bad here. So we've been, you know, I think we've been pretty lucky, actually. Don't forget, I'm also in the Okanagan, and higher up in the mountains is, of course, risky with snow and such. But You know, it's hovering around, you know, minus 5 Celsius. I think we'll get a little plunge now and again, but really winter for us is over in like 3 months, 4 months. So
Canadians are, you know, hardy people. They're good.
I'm good. So, when I think about that minus 40, oh, poor people in the storms. And you know, a shout out to everybody who is having a hard time. I know that it's, what, 3,000 kilometers wide, that storm that's going over the U.S. and lower parts of Canada, and it's been a brutal couple of days, and I'm afraid it's not over. So,
yeah.
You know, wishing everybody, you know, better times through this season, and happy solstice.
You're good. Absolutely stay safe. And looking forward to seeing everybody the week after, on the 28th. So we're going to be pulling cards. We're looking forward to having you join us. And Dr. Mike, any last thoughts tonight that you want to relay before we wrap up?
Glad I was able to be here.
Well, and thank you. You get a lot of great feedback. And
yeah, let me know if there's any other subjects that.
Absolutely.
Cover.
Careful what you wish for. Get you back on.
That's what the Navajo Ranger told me.
But well, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and those taking the time to catch up with us in the archives. We get a lot of feedback from you as well. We love the emails, and we appreciate you. We're looking forward to seeing you on the 28th, week after next. And until then, listen, think, learn, and grow. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Yeah, good night.